I don't know if this is an apocryphal story or if it happened exactly like this, but the story goes that 10 years ago, when the beloved and famous violinist Itzhak Perlman went to the Kennedy Center to perform a concert, he began the performance along with the orchestra, and one of the strings on his violin snapped. The obvious course of action would have been to stop everything and wait while a new violin was found. However, Perlman chose to gesture to the conductor to go ahead and continue the performance. And he played the entire concert using only 3 strings of his violin, having therefore to adapt and adjust and improvise as he went through the evening in order to make the sound be beautiful, vibrant, and exciting. People say it was one of the most moving and amazing concerts that they've ever seen or heard. And afterwards, when someone asked him about the decision, he said, "Sometimes an artist's task is to find out how much music he can still make with what he has left." This comment added meaning when one would realize that Mr. Perlman lost the use of his legs when he was 4 years old and contracted polio. Sometimes the artist's task is to see how much music he can make with what he has left. What can we make of what we have left? This might well be the title of Abraham and Sarah's story. The Bible, as it begins to recount their adventures, begins at the point at which they are already 75 years old. And we might have the expectation that this would be a time of life in which maybe there wasn't much left. But in fact, what Abraham and Sarah found out as they joined their lives with God was that there was a great deal still to be made of the opportunities and the new life and the miracles that God was presenting them with. The first mention in the Bible of Abraham and Sarah is in chapter 11 of the book of Genesis. And this is a portion of the Bible in which verse after verse is just the recitation of a genealogy. From the time of Noah and the flood, it goes on down, who gave birth to who married who was the father of who, on and on and on, until you sort of fall into a drowsy state, and then you hear that Terah becomes the father of Abram, and Abram marries a woman named Sarai. The one notable thing about Sarai, according to whoever had written this account, was that she was barren, unable to have children. And so as we have gotten into sort of this drowsy lineage, we have no buildup, no clue that we're about to start hearing about a person who turns out to be the ancestor of a nation, and through whom other nations will be blessed. We have no warning that we're about to start hearing of the person who ultimately becomes the father of 3 great monotheistic world religions. The very first clue we get is at the beginning of chapter 12, when God begins to speak to this Abram. Abram, by the way, was his original name, and Sarai, Sarah's original name. It's later in the story that God is going to change those names. So Genesis 12, verse 1. "Now the Lord said to Abram, 'Go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you.'" Now, as I have mentioned, Abram was not a young man when he received this command from God. And as I've also mentioned, the only thing we know was that this is a childless couple. But other than that, there's really no backstory that's given. So it leaves us with the opportunity to use our imaginations a little bit and to wonder about what Abram and Sarai might have been doing before God uprooted them and turned their lives upside down. I imagine that their lives had a certain routine and set structure to it. Even as nomadic people, there were certain places they went in the winter and certain places in the summer, and that their lives had an ordinary structure. And so within that context, what kind of people were they? What was unique about them? What were their personalities like? What kind of relationship did they have with each other?
Remember, this is just a drill, okay? This is just a drill. come on, sissy, come on, come on, come on, run! Serpentine, okay, serpentine.
I have two things to say to you, Amy.
Well, why two, sissy?
One, I refuse to wear...
Well, I just want to make sure that we're completely prepared. I want to be ready for anything. I've read all the Left Behind series. I know what's coming.
Yeah, so you've built yourself quite a little fortress here. Look, can we go back in the house now? Someone comes to the X-Files. This week they're investigating the mysterious disappearance of Jerry Springer's brain.
Ooh. Ooh. No, no, no. We have to go over the checklist.
Fine, let's have it.
Have what? I don't have it. I don't, you had it.
I don't have it.
Well, how in the world are we going to do a check if we don't have a list? Here it is. It was under the prunes.
We have prunes?
Yeah, 146 cases.
146? You don't even like prunes.
Yeah, no. Ugh, yeah. But we can use them for barter.
Barter?
Yeah, got a barter, baby.
Give me the list.
Okay. The time is 11:15. The checklist will be checked by Sissy. Okay. Okay. Sorry. Sorry. Okay. Go ahead.
What?
Check.
Ammunition.
Check.
Food.
Check.
Wait.
What?
Food.
Check.
No, what kind of
soup? Soup.
Soup?
Soup, yeah.
Well, what exactly are we
going to
cook this soup with your
dish? Cook. Cook. Oh, pan. Write pan on the list, okay?
Pan. Check.
What?
And we'll heat the pan with...
Heat the pan?
Heat the pan.
Oh, I know. Hot plate. Write that down, okay? Hot plate.
Okay. And where do we get the power to keep this hot plate?
Power.
Power. Electricity?
Oh. Well, I haven't really gotten all the bugs out yet.
I see. Tell me what, Ed. You work out all the bugs and get back to me if and when you get this all figured out in the little quarter here. And I'm going inside the house to see if they find Jerry's brain yet. You stay here with your cases of soup and your can opener all night if you want.
Can opener? Hey, Sissy, you better write can opener down on that list.
Go from your country and your kindred and your father's house to the land that I will show you. I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you and make your name great so that you will be a blessing. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. God had tremendous plans for Abram, but it is not that far-fetched to imagine that Abe might have been a bit of a bungler, or that his wife Sarai was somewhat long-suffering. The 75-year-old couple and their entourage of nephew and servants and possessions and flocks made it to Canaan and on toward the Negev, all right, inspired by a second encounter with God. But when they reached Egypt, where they went to escape a famine, the Bible doesn't say whether it was brought on by lack of hot plates and can openers or not, but when they went to Egypt to escape a famine, Abram got the bright idea that it would be smart to pretend that Sarai was his sister instead of his wife. She was so beautiful that he was afraid somebody might kill him in order to win her. So he allowed her to be taken into Pharaoh's harem. God wasn't real happy with this approach. And so God made things miserable for the Pharaoh until he caught on and let Sarai go and gave, in fact, gifts to Abram and Sarai to get them out of his country. Next, Abram suggested that he and his nephew go their separate ways, that each of them had so many flocks that would really be advisable if they could separate and spread out. But the nephew, Lot, inadvertently got caught up in a war and was taken captive. Abraham had to go to his rescue, succeeding only because God acted as his shield and delivered his enemies into his hand. Once they were safely settled back in Mamre, Abram thought maybe he could hurry God's plan along a little bit by taking a second wife. Sarai, always the practical one, had suggested this herself, actually, because she didn't see any way for a childless couple to become the ancestor of countless offspring. An Egyptian slave girl was selected as the candidate, and she soon became pregnant. It didn't take Sarai long to realize they had made a terrible mistake. She found herself overwhelmed with feelings of jealousy and inferiority. And there was Abram, caught in the middle of an unhappy wife and a slave girl now lording it over her mistress. And he told Sarai, "Settle this in whatever way seems best to you." And Sarai became so harsh and so cruel toward Hagar that she actually ran away. And once again, God had to intervene. God had to come to the rescue to put things right. "Go back," God says to Hagar. "I will multiply your offspring too." At this point, God decides maybe it would be advisable to again repeat these promises that had been given consistently over now 20 years of time, but somehow Abram and Sarah have a hard time remembering, so God bestows upon them new names, Abraham and Sarah, hoping that somehow this new name will enable them to remember that God's promises are unchanging, even if it takes a while to see how they will be fulfilled. So they get these new names, and then sometime after that comes the visit of the divine presence that I told the children about. The Lord appeared to Abraham by the oaks of Mamre as he sat at the tent in the heat of the day. He looked up and saw three men standing near him. And so Abraham goes into high gear, making a welcome speech and mobilizing the servants and giving instructions to Sarah, and the guests are royally treated. Sarah throughout this time stays out of sight, but she is in fact close enough to hear the conversation that is going on. And she hears that news that she, well past her childbearing years, is going to have a baby son. The promise seems at once more ridiculous and more enticing than it has ever seemed before. Sarah can't help herself. She starts to laugh. "Me and that old man have a baby? Right." And then she feels rebuked by the reply, "Is anything too wonderful for the Lord?" She is suddenly afraid her skepticism is getting her in trouble again. But God does not seem angry. God only insists on the truth. "I know you, and you did laugh." This time, finally, it seems that Abraham, at least, has chosen the right action. Offering hospitality to visitors was a sacred obligation, and those who failed in this duty could not earn God's favor. Appreciating the respect that Abraham has shown to these visitors, God now begins to try to give instruction in holy living and divine justice. The saga of this couple and their descendants is far from over, but we've heard enough at this point to draw some conclusions. From a man who is concerned primarily with saving his own skin, God appears to be making someone whose name will forever be associated with the concept of faith. And to a woman who has schooled herself to live as best she can under far less than ideal circumstances, God is graciously preparing to give incredible, miraculous joy. Did they deserve it? Not any more or any less than we do or anyone ever does. Can we learn from them? Certainly. One thing we learn from Abraham and Sarah is that God is not limited by our shortcomings. Old Abe was not the ideal husband. He was self-centered and sometimes deceitful. Sarah was not the perfect wife. She was always rolling her eyes, and too often she offered herself as a martyr in order to try to make things work out. But nothing is impossible for God. Nothing is too wonderful for God. Even into their old age, God is creating forgiveness, miracles, and new beginnings. They're still together. They can still enjoy each other. And at this late date, they are blessed with the thrill of pregnancy. The story of Abraham and Sarah also reveals to us that God acts whenever possible to redeem us. That is, to save us from our mistakes. And not only to come to the rescue, but actually to make things even better. As God led Abraham to rescue Lot, an opportunity was created for witness and testimony that those who trust in the Lord have a powerful ally. When Abraham and Sarah got ahead of God's plan and brought a slave girl into the mix of their relationship, and she gave birth to Abraham's child, God did not allow Hagar and the baby Ishmael to suffer as they might have if Abraham and Sarah had had their way. "I will bless this child too," says God, appearing personally to Hagar to comfort her and reassure her. Perhaps we can hope that God understands that in striving to do right, sometimes we inadvertently do wrong. And God is able to bring good even out of our errors and misunderstandings. Sarah's pain was real. She longed desperately for a child, and all of her past experience had led her to believe that she would never gain that joy by the usual means. Hagar's pain was also real. She had been severely taken advantage of and was being mistreated for doing exactly what had been expected of her. The injustice wounded her. God did not condemn either woman and did not choose between them. God blessed both their children, both the one in Hagar's arms and the one that would be given to Sarah. All of which points out another lesson from these ancestors in the faith, which is that we have no secret from God. There is no use trying to pretend that we're siblings and not spouses. There's no use trying to pretend that we didn't laugh if we did. There is no use running away as Hagar did and expecting not to be noticed. We have no secrets from God, so we might as well learn to be honest with ourselves and with others and with God. We should not rely on sneakiness to keep us safe. Our security lies with God. We need not hide our doubt or our delight. God is not going to abandon us just because we feel normal human emotions. When we think we've got an escape plan, we would do well to remember that there is nowhere we can go to flee from God's presence. Trying to be something that we are not is not required of us. However, taking Abraham and Sarah as our example, there are qualities that a relationship with God does call forth from us. First among those qualities is a willingness to risk. Abraham and Sarah left their home and everything that was familiar to them in order to start a new life as God asked them to do. The second quality emerging from a life with God is patience. As someone among us said in reflecting on this story of a very elderly couple giving birth to their first child, why did God think this was a good idea? We don't really know what God is thinking. In fact, we don't know if thinking is a word that properly applies to God. We do know that sometimes it takes an awfully long time for hopes and dreams and promises to be realized, even when those promises have been given to us by God. Patience is often required. Finally, humility is an advisable trait. Imagining that we know better than God what ought to be done, imagining that we should rush in and take charge, often gets us in trouble, as the saga of Abraham and Sarah indicates. We would be wise not to take things into our own hands, but instead to allow God to be God and to trust that God will accomplish what is necessary in God's good time. Courage, patience, and humility. Both the positive and the negative examples found in the Bible motivate us to aspire to these characteristics. God is able to accomplish far more than we could ever ask or imagine. God knows us through and through. God is working for our salvation. These are themes that are found over and over again in the Scriptures. The story of our faith dates back an astonishing number of generations. Abraham and Sarah responded to God, and so they continue to help lead the way for us and for a multitude of other believers. We can pray that every stage of our lives will be as fruitful as their old age, generating life and hope, renewal and spiritual awareness. Holy God, we haven't always realized it in the past, but truly you have been near every step of our way, and you are near to us even now. We can appreciate the great leap and the confusion and the laughter of Abraham and Sarah as we consider the times in our lives when we have had to set forth in new ventures, having no idea what is to come. In fact, this morning as we consider their undertakings, we want to lift up to you, Lord, those among us who are experiencing significant milestones even now, those who are graduating from their lifelong until now school, those graduating high school and college, graduate programs, those being called to new stages in their career, new places in the world, new relationships or new undertakings in their lives. We pray that indeed through trusting you, looking to you as our hope and our security, our lives also might be a blessing to others. We thank you for those you have sent before us, for the record of their struggles and their mistakes, so that we might know, Lord, that you can work even with us. And we thank you for sending Jesus Christ to walk beside us, to teach us and show us everything we might need to know. We pray now using the words that he gave us. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory forever. Amen.